Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Chander in Palo Alto.
Hi, guys. This is Arne in Oslo.
We should stop saying shelter in place or we are home. That's kind of a norm now. We've been saying it for more than 6 months every week. Yeah.
So we feel it's normal. Simple as that.
So I think last week we covered a broad set of topics about what happened in the summer. So this week we are going to cover one specific topic. And that's a company which has origins in the Nordic countries, but is now based in Silicon Valley. And that's Unity Technologies. You want to tell Arne what they do so people know what it is?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, obviously the Nordics will claim this company, even if it's been based in San Francisco, I think, since 2009. it is a company that originates out of Copenhagen, Denmark, where it was founded in 2004, and a Danish founding team, although the original founder CEO was originally from Iceland, but grew up in Denmark or something like that. Anyway, we'll claim the company from the Nordics. And Unity, as you said, is the name of the company. And the company operates a software platform servicing companies creating and operating interactive, real-time 3D content. And what does interactive, real-time 3D content mean? Well, originally that means it's a platform for making games. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, 3D content is used for other things than games now as well, such as animated films and that sort of thing, but also going into architecture, construction, automotive, and a number of other industries where sort of like VR is coming into play to look at drawings or models of 3D content. But the origin of the company is essentially making games, and the second is going into films. Mm-hmm.
So they compete with like part of Epic Games, which we covered last week. They also have an ARM Unreal Engine, I think, that makes similar stuff.
Absolutely. So the core of what they do is like generation, you know, how you create the content itself. And then, and that's a subscription model where they have many tiers of subscriptions and even some free tiers. And that part of it is very, very similar to the Unreal engine that Epic Games have. Now, the operating interactive content is more tools around once you publish games and you want to monetize them, or you want to analyze your user base, or you want to run, you know, in-game purchases or advertising, or, you know, that part of Unity's business is slightly different than Epic's business, whereas Epic has like the big revenue income is that their own game Fortnite, and also they have like a game store similar to the App Store on mobile phones and so forth. So there are similarities and differences, but like the Unreal Engine and the content creation part, which is like what Unity is most known for, is very, very similar.
Yeah, so what I see difference here is they don't publish their own games. They enable other developers to develop games using their tools, games or CGI or whatever else.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, Unity is the biggest from that perspective. You can argue which is better, Unreal or Unity. I think there are reasons to claim that sort of the capabilities for very advanced content, maybe Unreal is a step ahead or is more capable, but Unity has the lead in terms of number of creators and market share of games that are created on the Unity platform. So the numbers they published themselves is that 50% of all games are created using Unity, and that is across mobile, PC, and consoles.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a widely used tool for creating game content, and also the numbers that they published is that there are 1.5 million creators using the platform, and that there are more than 3 billion monthly downloads of content created using Unity.
Yeah. And these numbers Arne just mentioned, they're, you know, just, they were just released last week because they filed for S1 to go public. Prior to that, they were private, and that's the reason we are talking about them today, because they filed for an S1 to go public.
Absolutely. So there's like an opening in the market now, or at least there's been believed to be an opening in the market. There was a bunch of companies that came public over the summer. Those IPOs were generally very successful, although the pops were slightly higher than some of existing investors wanted. And now there's a sort of rush of new S1s for companies going public in the US. And Unity is one of those. And they're looking to list on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker U. You know, big IPO of what we claim is a Nordic company is a big story for the Nordic tech scene.
Mm. And this may be interesting for the Nordic entrepreneurs. Do you know, Arne, or you have a hypothesis why they would choose to move to Silicon Valley 5 years after starting in Copenhagen?
Well, I think, you know, the world was, you know, Unity now going public is sort of for the people who are not in sort of the core of this industry and overnight success, but in reality, they've been going at it for 16 years, right? And I think it's fair to say that the world looked quite different back in, you know, 16 years ago or 10 years ago. And at the time in 2009, when they moved, I think, you know, the gaming industry was clearly centered around the US. I think today it's much more a global phenomenon, and you can even claim that it's, you know, Asia is leading. But definitely there was a strong ecosystem, and there still is in California. And it's also a question of gaining access to a lot of capital to build a company. And the A round of the company was led by Sequoia, which is obviously a famed, possibly the most famous venture capital firm in the world, based out of originally Sandy Road and now also San Francisco, but also with offices around the world. Yeah. So I think, you know, access to capital was definitely part of it. And it's a company that's raised a lot of money over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. So generally, you know, VCs don't like investing in gaming companies, but this is, you know, more like a gaming developer enabler company. So that's why probably Sequoia, et cetera, invested. Do you have any investments in gaming companies, Arne?
Yes, we have a stake in a company called Metal TV, but it's also word about Unity and which translates to the exposure you get through a company like Metal TV as well. So you know, the gaming industry, and we had a podcast about this before. We talked to Per Arne of Amplifier Game Invest before. It's it's a hit driven business.
Yep.
Much like the music industry or the film industry or something like that.
Or the venture industry.
Yes, but the returns are even more asymmetric in content industries and gaming in particular than it is in venture. So yep. Let's say in venture, one out of 20 is a winner or something like that, big winner. In games, it might be one out of 100 or something like that. Mm-hmm. My numbers might not be correct, but you understand the gist of what I'm saying. And the revenue streams are shorter in nature in the gaming industry than it is for building a big company. So generally the gaming industry, and I'm sure there are investors who disagree with me, but are less well fitted to the venture capital model as such. Mm-hmm. Actually, Europe and China has done better than the US on this front. An investment in Unity or Metal TV in our case, is more an exposure to the industry as a whole rather than a company being exposed to the portfolio of an industry, so to speak. Mm-hmm. The company has to work, but regardless, it's not dependent on one or a small set of games being successful. It's more, does the industry as a whole grow, and can you play a role in enabling that industry? So an investment in Unity, you can say it's like an investment on index basis of the gaming industry, and will it macro-wise grow? Or if you were to invest in Unity, Epic, and Tencent, you certainly would be sort of index exposed to the gaming industry. And this is an industry that's been growing very rapidly and is now the biggest content industry in the world, being bigger than film and music as well.
Yeah, I think gaming surpassed film, like the theater revenue, like 15, 20 years ago. I remember I wrote an article on my blog 15 or something years ago that how gaming was more than $10 billion and all Hollywood box office receipts were less than $10 billion. This is very old data.
So have you... If you look at the content creation part of Unity, it's more like a software as a service company. It just so happens that the customers are the gaming industry and the movie industry and some other creative types, whereas the operating services is more sort of transactional around the industry.
Yeah, something I found interesting is like more than 50% of the headcount is R&D. More than 50%.
Yes, and to be frank, this is what I find the most surprising, I guess, by looking at the numbers. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, this is a company that's been developing their software for 16 years or so. And if you look at, let's say the last 6 months of revenue, which is the first half of 2020, mm-hmm. they had $351 million of revenue. So it's a big company, right? Mm-hmm. But R&D expenses for the same time period is $167 million. So 50% of the revenues are still R&D.
Like, do you think they're just classifying a lot of dev as R&D to show more, operating margin? Because more than even semiconductor world doesn't have, that much money on R&D, or just because they're developing tools and that requires research. Like, have you seen that at any other company? Like, more than 50% is R&D?
It's normal in the startup world. So you have a company and the first few years of its life cycle, what you spend money is on engineering resources, building product, right? But a company of this size, yeah. I can't put my finger on somebody who has that. And it was quite surprising to me that it was this big. Of course, what you would say is that, in terms of 3D content, it's still early days. The gaming industry will continue to grow. And, the use cases for this sort of thing is going to be multiplying in years to come. And you would continue to invest in building new tooling to retain the market market leading position in this space. And that's a much bigger opportunity 5 or 10 years into the future than it is today. And hence it makes sense, this R&D investment. I'm still puzzled that it's that heavy still, 16 years in.
Do you know if any other company in the gaming industry, because that would be like a more relevant comparison, is there a gaming industry thing or it's a Unity thing that R&D is more than 50% of revenue after they are, almost $6-7 million company revenue wise?
Yeah, I don't know the details. If you were to look at the books of Epic, which is still a private company, but some of their numbers have been published, they are not in this position. But that's also because Fortnite is dominant in their books, both from a revenue perspective and a profit perspective. So the difference here is that Unity is still losing a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Whereas Epic Games is a profitable company, but that's primarily driven by Fortnite.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And I also saw they bought a lot of companies in the last 2 years, especially, but I think since 2009, they bought like a dozen companies. Is that a common thing in the gaming world, acquiring other companies?
There are not that many similar companies like Unity. I would say that a lot of the players are more content driven by game titles like EA Games and these sort of companies, right? Yep. And they buy smaller studios to consolidate a portfolio of content, right? So that's one way of going about it. Mm-hmm. The biggest player on that front is of course Tencent, and they've bought loads and loads of even very big gaming studios and gaming companies, but it's a content roll up strategy. And even Microsoft has done that, but Microsoft is obviously a company with a multitude of interests, right? But Microsoft bought gaming studios but also enabling technology. When it comes to Unity, it seems to be more bolt-on acquisitions that are building their product portfolio out.
They're not you're right, gaming companies may buy smaller studios for talent, but here they are developing tools, so it may be like a building a portfolio approach.
Yes, absolutely. So I think the Create Solutions, which is essentially their authoring tool or creative tool for building content and games, mm-hmm. that's sort of in my view where they're coming from and sort of where they started building their platform. And I would assume that that's mostly in-house developed products. But what they call Operate Solutions, which is more around analyzing user behavior, advertising, in-app purchases, this sort of thing, I think is more a product portfolio of add-on acquisitions.
Yeah.
Which is non-core to what they were originally. So I know that they bought a company called Delta DNA, mm-hmm. which is about analytics. And I know that they bought a company called Vivox, which is more sort of text and voice chat plugin that you use for gamers to build those capabilities into games, mm-hmm. which is different than the 3D content, right? So I think there are just adding capabilities that are not as core to the 3D content itself.
Yeah, and they also might be trying to get into entertainment industry, selling them stuff so they can generate like animation, which is getting more and more common in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else you found interesting in S1, Arne?
I think a few things. So the company has raised a lot of money. They raised about $1.3 billion. And the last valuation was around $6 billion. Mm-hmm. I think they raised about $700 million sort of building the company up to about a year ago. And then my understanding is that they raised about $600 million sort of in preparation for the IPO, which is partially also a secondary transaction. So I think they spent about $700 million building it to this this point. Mm-hmm. And what was the carried forward loss of the company is about $600 million. So that's sort of the investment in building it that's been taken. Sequoia owns about 24% of the company. So they are clearly the one benefiting the most from this IPO. Mm-hmm. The expectation I've read in the market is that it will enter the market around $12 billion. That's the expectation. Now, of course, we'll see the market is somewhat...
The market is somewhat fluctuating. It's down.
It's been going up, but today is a very...
I think we lost you, Arne.
I'm back.
Okay. Yeah. So today the market is down, so we don't know how well they will do whenever they go public.
Exactly. I also think the S1 sort of appears somewhat sober compared to some of the other ones we've seen the last year, like WeWork and these sort of fantasy S1s. at the same time, obviously, they are in a growth segment. The two sort of metrics, it wasn't so full of metrics as I like them to be. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that they're focused on two net metrics primarily, mm-hmm. one being a net dollar retention, where they've been continuously improving and have a really good metric, which is 142%. So that means that the customers that spent $100 last year is this year spending $142 mm-hmm. on average. So there's another company have filed an S1, which has fantastic performance, which is Snowflake. Their net dollar retention is 158, which is the best I've seen. But this 142 number is still definitely a best in class number. And the other one they seem to focus on is how many customers spend more than $100,000 a year. So these would be film studios, large gaming companies, and this sort of thing. And there was 714 customers. So they're definitely trying to build revenue by getting more big customers, essentially.
Yeah, that also tells you the deal size. If they are, reporting more than 100,000, so for them, it's a big account, more than 100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those were the key takeaways in number terms. The one thing that's not clear is their customer acquisition cost or their lifetime value. Mm-hmm. So I also haven't seen somebody who has done any reverse engineering on this to sort of come up with those numbers. Those are typically the things I like to see when I see software as a service kind of companies. I assume if those numbers were great, they would have told us.
Yeah,
but the lifetime value must be good because it's highly related to the net retention. The puzzling thing is why they're not saying anything about customer acquisition cost.
Yeah, I mean, generally, it must be high, as you said. If it was low, they would have said it.
Yeah.
They have 5 million monthly active creators, meaning people use the 1.5 million people use the product to create games every month.
Or other content, but possibly mostly games.
Yeah.
Which is also less than I would have expected, to be honest.
Yeah, you're right. How much do you remember was Unreal? How many did they have?
So I don't have any figures for that. I think it just seems to me like if you look at other, you know, creative tools like Adobe packages or, you know, coding tools or something like that, you would expect that those have many more users, right? Mm-hmm. So it is still sort of a specialized user group. But then again, they pay more then.
Yeah.
I think the net retention was clearly what stuck out to me as being their strength. One thing that you look for is there's something in software as a service that you call the rule of 40, which is essentially you want to have a sum of your EBITDA and your growth rate being more than 40. And if you have that, so you're allowed to lose money on an EBITDA basis if you grow super fast, but when you grow slows down, it should come out as EBITDA, right? And therefore, this sum of 40, that's like a health check of a software service company. And Unity is actually below that, which is somewhat unusual for somebody going to market. And the reason for that is essentially their high R&D cost.
So it's EBITDA percentage plus growth rate should add
percentage
up 40.
Yeah, so preferably above 40.
What's the logic for that? Why 40 is the number?
Well, this is just something somebody came up with probably 10 years ago or something like that. And since that, it's become one of these things people look for, the rule of 40. And it just, you know, if you just do that and you look at which companies do well over time, they typically end in this bracket. Of course, it doesn't, to me, it's, you know, If you start looking at Unity, right, the reason why you would have this high in R&D is because you're investing in the future, right? Mm-hmm. A future that's going to happen. But, you know, it would seem to me that if you think at the basics, if that future is bright and growing, then the company should be growing, right? And it seems to me that the growth is somewhat low for somebody who's investing that much in R&D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, depends on R&D effectiveness, depends, you know, R&D is gray area. You can, you know, put a lot of the dev people in R&D. So then your operating margin goes up. So it depends, but in general, you're right. Companies that spend more in R&D, they have higher probability of doing better in future.
Yeah. Otherwise, the logic would be that we're R&Ding into something that's not happening now, but will happen, you know, 2 years in the future or something, and therefore we don't see the growth numbers associated with this R&D. But it's
go ahead.
It's an unusual thing to see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to compare their SG&A with you know. Epic or other gaming tools people. If R&D is super high and SG&A is super low, that means they're playing games themselves. If that's normal and this is high, that means, yeah, they are actually spending.
Yeah, I mean, they have gross margin of 79%. So there's plenty of margin to work with, but they're spending real money both on R&D and sales and marketing. So you would have thought that the growth rate would be a little bit higher than what you're seeing.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out. We wish them luck. I hope the, it all depends, I think, how the market is doing at the time. But they also have a SPAC option now, which wasn't available to many startups before. But Silver Lake is involved, so probably they won't take that option.
No, I'm confident this is going to be an IPO. I'm confident it's going to go to market with no big drama. I mean, it's a well-performing company with a very predictable run rate. It's just a question of, you know, will it perform great at the IPO? That can depend both on the daily form of the market and how will it perform going forward.
Yeah,
but it is a quality asset. It's not a question that, you know, be derailed unless, you know, the market stops working or something like that. There's also one, you know, interesting dynamic related to what we talked about last week, which was, you know, Epic Games going to war with Apple and Google, right? In Unity's case, you know, they're creating content that's being distributed on all gaming platforms, but the biggest volume certainly is distributed through Apple and Google. And if, you know, the rules of the app stores would change, Unity is, in a way that impacts Unity, that could, there's sort of two points of failure, but either one of them could be severe, right? So they are, to a large extent, Unity is to a large extent dependent on Apple and Google and at the mercy of these companies, which is an unusual risk, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, but they are not making much noise about it because they don't directly, they're not a publisher.
They're not, and they also don't have a, you know, as I mentioned about, we're not meant to speak, you know, mostly about Epic today, but because it's a comparison, it's an interesting thing. And given that they are at war with Google and Apple, and one of the things we didn't speak about last time is that Epic has a game store on PC, which is in a way competing with App Store, even if they are, you know, Apple and Google are stronger on mobile. And the game store of Epic takes a 12% cut, not a 30% cut. So they are, you know, trying to get market share simply by taking a smaller cut, where Unity is not playing, they're not confronting the big ones on mobile, and they're also not copying the business model directly. So Unity is a friendlier company to Apple and Google.
Yeah, you're right.
And Unity operates on Google's cloud platform.
That helps. But where does Epic operate? They also got an AWS. They must be using some cloud service.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that on top of my head.
Yeah. Okay, shall we end here? I think this was interesting, looking into a Danish company becoming American company. By the way, the CEO of Unity now is a former Electronic Arts CEO. The founder gave that job away to that EA person in 2014.
Yeah. So there were three original Danish founders, let's call it that, even if the one of them was an Icelandic citizen living in Copenhagen at the time the company was started. And one of them is left. That's the CTO. Two other ones have left the company before.
Well, we wish them well, and we hope a lot of other Nordic companies go IPO.
Absolutely. We like $12 billion IPOs of Nordic companies, assuming that's what it will be.
Yeah. Anything you'd be is fine with me. Arne's basically, he likes money more.
Yeah, and cool stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Okay, thanks everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
See you, bye.